We're going to switch gears here, talk about local politics, city politics, with Bill Ruthart, my Tribune colleague, a member of the Tribune's political team, who's been a bit busy lately for the dog days of summer.
Yeah, there is no slow season anymore, I don't think, these days. Not when there's 10 people challenging Rahm Emanuel for mayor. So,
well, let's start with the mayor and the news that the mayor is making about this redevelopment of the Riverwalk east of, I guess, is it Michigan Avenue?
State Street, Michigan Avenue. So anybody who follows the mayor closely like I do knows that the Riverwalk is...
That's his bright, shiny object.
He loves the Riverwalk. It's his pet project, and he several years ago got a nearly $100 million loan, interest-free, from the federal government during the Obama administration to build those brand new sections, basically west of State Street all the way down near Wolf Point. Those are the areas probably most people think about when they think about the Riverwalk. They built actually into the channel. Those right. walkways are right down by the water. But there's this stretch east of State Street, from State Street to Lakeshore Drive, basically, that's much older, much of it dating to the early 1970s. And a couple sections of that was done in the 90s, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. But basically everything from Michigan Avenue to Lakeshore Drive is older, kind of, asphalt, dirt path type. The businesses there aren't as kind of formal, and they're kind of running out of trailers and
pop-up
type stuff. So the mayor wants to spend $10 million to kind of refurbish that eastern stretch of the Riverwalk so it blends in more with the new, shinier western end that has bars, restaurants, city winery, Tiny Tap. There's some cafes down there that all have done, booming business. The mayor in my interview with him for this story said that City Winery did $1 million in business for July alone down there on the Riverwalk, which was a new record. So, they want to carry that kind of, same. They use the word palette. They want it to look similar. They don't want this big disconnect between the old and the new. So, the city's going to spend $10 million on it, new landscaping, a lot of planters going in. Four businesses along that stretch will be putting in somewhere around $3 million to do their sections of the Riverwalk to build restaurants down there. Some of those businesses are there already, but they'll have much nicer, newer facilities
and possibly permanent.
Even year-round. Yeah,
and I was curious about that aspect of it because I think that's, when we look at those numbers, which are huge numbers, like for City Winery, just the seasonal nature of the business tells you, how popular it is. But now, when you look at some of what these businesses are talking about, year-round business, which is kind of an intriguing idea.
Right, and I think some of it has actually started with City Winery. They have these, I don't know if anybody walks down Wacker Drive in the winter, they're probably looking at their shoes and not trying to stay warm, but City Winery puts these basically bubbles down there, and
right.
there's these tables that are enclosed them, and so they're heated, and you can sit out there and even in the winter. And there's the Island Party Huts, a business that's down on this older stretch of the Riverwalk, that currently is kind of, wooden stand with string lights in the trees down there, but they're talking about building a glass enclosed restaurant with a retractable roof, and all the doors would open. So conceivably, for St. Patrick's Day, or even just, and if they have the demand in the winter when it's, you could sit down there while it's snowing and belly up to the bar.
Watch a Bears game on a snowy Sunday.
Yeah, so that's the concept. They're going to probably rip out a lot of the trees that are down there to realign the path. And so some people are getting a little heartburn about that just because it does really have a different feel down there. It's more of a park-like setting. And I think some people, one of the business owners down there said they don't want to see the park aspect go away too much. There's plenty of concrete, he said, on the other end of the Riverwalk. But certainly to allow room for some of these businesses to grow, some changes are going to have to be made. One of the things that also is going to change is that path that's down there is going to be located much closer to the water. Currently, it's kind of closer to Wacker Drive, which
right.
isn't that desirable. And there's also going to be a lot of effort done to mask Wacker Drive either with landscaping or public art, that kind of thing. And so a lot of this is still conceptual. A glass elevator will be put in, which there is no elevator down the Riverwalk currently, so that's a big thing in terms of accessibility. And the Vista Tower that's under construction, the developers of that have to pay for that elevator, as well as a walkway that will go under Wacker Drive, connecting the Vista Tower and Lakeshore East neighborhood, which is basically where we are right now,
right,
to the Riverwalk.
Now, $10 million. Where's the money coming from? And as much as the mayor likes to talk about the Riverwalk, how is this playing with some of the other opponents out there?
Well, so the $10 million is a two-year project, 2019 and 2020, and it'll come out of the city's capital budget. $10 million in the grand scheme of the city budget is a very, very small amount of money. However, you know, Emmanuel has faced all kinds of criticism.
Well, I was gonna say, given the climate, that
for not doing enough to uplift economically challenged neighborhoods on the south and west sides. The mayor has a number of policies that he points to counter that he is doing that. That's a whole other discussion.
Yes.
You know, yeah, you're certainly going to see some activists, perhaps some mayoral candidates, I'm not sure we've heard a ton of it yet, say, hey, you know, we already have a Riverwalk, let's put this $10 million somewhere else that can be put to better use. Well, mayor counters that this is a major attraction that's outdone our wildest imaginations in terms of popularity. We should continue to invest in it, continue to draw people down there. The revenue that generated by those businesses, a good cut of it, some of these contracts up to 10%, goes to the city, which goes to paying back that federal loan. And Emmanuel said that he's working with the staff to punch some numbers on some even more expensive additions to the Riverwalk, perhaps similar to the other end where the path will be built in closer to the water or into the seawall. And they may approach the Trump administration about another loan or a refinancing of their current loan. So we'll see how that goes.
That'll be interesting. We're speaking with Bill Ruthart, my Tribune colleague and part of the Tribune political team. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined by my Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart. We're talking over some issues involving the mayor and, of course, moving into issues involving the mayoral race. And on that subject, we've got Ron on the line. Ron, as always, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah, good morning. Real question. I know the last thing we probably need is another candidate to enter the race, but I wanted to ask you, is that a possibility? I know it's the summertime. People are not following politics as much. Just doesn't seem that these candidates really getting too much traction. It doesn't seem to be that much interest. So is it a possibility that we may see another more organized candidate, you know, who has some more money backing? So, okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron.
Ron, good to talk to you again. It's always possible. However, you know, a lot of folks have gotten in the race earlier this time than 4 years ago. 4 years ago, you might remember, this time of year, the rumors of Karen Lewis running for mayor had barely started, and by October she had been diagnosed with brain cancer, and that's when Jesus Chuy Garcia jumped in. This time we've got former Chicago Police Board President Lori Lightfoot, CPS former CEO Paul Vallis, Gary McCarthy, Willie Wilson, Neil Salas Griffin, Dorothy Brown, Cook County Circuit Clerk Troy LaRavier, the Principals Association, Jamal Green, Black Lives Matter activists, a couple other lesser-known candidates, John Kozlar and Matthew Roney. So we got a big field already. Dorothy Brown has a lot of name recognition. Paul Vallis has held a lot of big positions. So Bridget Gaynor was one name that a lot of people were expecting to get in, the Cook County Commissioner, who grew up on the southwest side, has a north side district, had done a lot of work with the Cook County Land Bank. She literally had all her campaign staff ready, had, from what I could tell, a announcement video ready to go, and then pulled the plug last weekend and decided not to run. So that was a bit of a surprise. Even the Emmanuel advisors were grumbling privately that they hadn't convinced her to not run, and they were, you know, concerned about her cutting into his north side base. So that was a break for Emmanuel, also a bit of a break for Lori Lightfoot, I think. So, Ron, I mean, it's possible someone would get in, but I don't know there'd be a name that would excite you necessarily. I don't think that at this point we're going to see some heavy hitter with huge name ID just come out of thin air.
I don't know who that would be.
Well, you know, Valerie Jarrett's a name that people mention from time to time, but I haven't heard any indication that she's interested in running for mayor. But something like that, you know, an Arnie Duncan or something, right? Where somebody, oh, we didn't see that coming. That's a big name. People know that name. But it just doesn't seem likely at this point. I'm sure that's, you know, a concern for the Emanuel campaign. You know, his numbers, his popularity is still a big issue, particularly in the African American community. But I think, you know, we're going to see these 10 challengers, and probably there's five who maybe are better known and have a little bit more experience, try to jockey for position, find their lane, and see if they have any money to get their message out. Emanuel's already raised more than $10 million toward his reelection, which is far more than the rest of the field combined.
Well, and as much as the issue of excitement or whatever, I mean, it is August.
Right.
We're also got a gubernatorial election and state election going on, and a lot of the oxygen is kind of getting sucked into that versus the mayoral. The mayoral is still kind of a percolating.
Yeah, I do think they'll come, you know, after Labor Day, you know,
sure,
which is typically when people say, oh, that's when the November elections really hit their stride and everybody tunes in. I already see the same thing with the mayor's race. I think a lot of people in the city, at least, look at the governor's race and see it as a foregone conclusion. You have a heavily Democratic city and everybody looks at it and says, J.B. Pritzker's up 20 points. That thing's over. Let's focus on the mayor's race. And there certainly is a lot of that discussion statewide, out in the suburbs. Of course, you know, the fall midterms are a big deal. But inside the city, in these neighborhoods, in these wards, I think once people are done going on their vacations and everyone's back in school and back to work, you know, that race is going to ramp up a lot faster than people think it is.
Well, and it's how it plays in neighborhoods too.
Right.
I mean, that's the way city politics works, and you know, I think you're right as far as how city residents feel about the state race for governor, that Chicago's a Democratic town. It's how big does Pritzker win Chicago by, kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
And as far as a foregone conclusion. But, yeah, it's where these mayoral candidates playing, as you said, finding their lane. And I'm not so sure they've all found a lane.
No, it's early. And I do think that you can watch how they act, and especially Emanuel, to tell whether the campaign season has started. And he hasn't given his big kickoff speech or whatever, but
he hasn't worn a sweater.
He does have his campaign staff, and he did, I think it was CBS, had this fantastic footage. Folks should Google it, of the mayor dancing at some CHA housing picnic on, I think Friday evening. Was it Channel 7?
Yes.
I want to give credit where credit is due. If you watch the mayor's Twitter, Facebook page, if you don't watch it regularly, like I have to, go check it out. But you can see the mayor's out on the weekends. He's at beer festivals. They're taking pictures of him with all these different microbreweries and tagging each brewery in the Facebook photo. In his mind, the campaign is on. He's out there. He's trying to be the everyman. And we'll have to see where all these candidates. You know, Lori Lightfoot, I think I've seen, you know, again, she's been out at a number of festivals. Paul Vallis. This is a good time of year for people to get out to these block club parties and these
right.
neighborhood festivals and start, you know, trying to figure out what their message is. There's even been a couple of very low-key mayoral forums where, you know, three or four of them have showed up to practice, basically.
No venue too small.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think Emanuel, you know, running for a third term post Laquan McDonald. Let's not forget the Laquan McDonald, the Jason Van Dyke trial scheduled for September. I mean, that's gonna have everybody tuned into city politics as well. So it is going to ramp up in a hurry. I'm not saying it's going to overshadow the governor's race in Chicago, but certainly that is a very dynamic race with a lot of voices, a lot of challengers, and it'll be fascinating to watch how it plays out.
Well, speaking of Laquan McDonald and that police shooting, you have the federal consent decree issues going on involving the city and Lisa Madigan, and even issues still unresolved about
right.
Issues of, you know, requiring when there is a gun being pointed at somebody. I mean, the where are we on this whole idea of the consent decree?
Well, to give the fastest history lesson I can, you know, after Laquan McDonald shooting, U.S. Justice Department does a year-long investigation. The Chicago Police Department finds all kinds of problems, including a pattern of excessive force and police misconduct. They recommend a federal consent decree, which is when a federal judge oversees all the changes, reforms in the police department.
And their progress.
And the progress, and the city doesn't comply, there's consequences in court. Emanuel stood up with the Obama Justice Department, agreed to a consent decree. Then Donald Trump comes into office, and Emanuel tries to cut an out-of-court agreement with the Trump administration, which, of course, it was never interested in a consent decree and also not that interested in constitutional policing as a whole. This document that Emanuel sends as a draft to the Trump administration on police reform is evaluated by Lori Lightfoot, who's now opponent running for mayor, but was his appointee on police reform, a couple of different panels. She criticizes it. Emanuel, for several weeks, just kind of tries to duck and hem and haw and says, we don't really have any other route to go on this. And then Lisa Madigan calls it ludicrous for the mayor of Chicago to negotiate with the Trump Justice Department on police reform. A month later, sues the city of Chicago to force a consent decree. Emanuel then agrees to enter negotiations with Madigan on this police reform. So they've had the negotiations. They've released a draft agreement of them. They've agreed on hundreds of areas on how to reform the police department. There's one area they don't agree on, and that is whether when a Chicago police officer points a gun at someone, the police department should record every instance in which that happens. Lisa Madigan thinks it should. It's been included in consent decrees in other places like Baltimore. Emanuel and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson say not so fast. We're concerned that that requirement may lead officers to hesitate when pulling their gun. Fraternal Order of Police is against the consent decree wholeheartedly. They're certainly against this provision of it. They point to a case where an officer didn't pull her gun and was severely beaten and has some long-term brain injuries as a result. And she reportedly told the police superintendent she was worried about, you know, them becoming the next viral situation. So, you know, the counter argument is a police officer really thinking about having to fill out paperwork when they're in a heat of the moment situation and someone's life's in danger or their own life is in danger and they're pulling a gun? So they're still negotiating that topic and they might have to end up arguing it in court. We'll see. But this whole process is fascinating in terms of the mayoral race because you have Gary McCarthy, former police superintendent, has been very quiet about this, but he said in the past that the Justice Department investigation was a joke. He's not a fan of consent decrees. Paul Vallis has two sons who are cops, a wife who's a former officer. He's like on both sides of the fence on the gun pointing thing and isn't, you know, trying to kind of in some ways have it both ways. You got Lori Lightfoot, who is Emanuel's appointed president of the police board, who's in charge of his police reform task force, saying this consent decree doesn't go far enough. She'd like to see some changes. And you got a whole bunch of other people, you know, somewhere in the middle or haven't been asked yet. So it's going to play out throughout the campaign. It's going to be an issue. Not only how fair Chicago is policed is going to be an issue because of Laquan McDonald, but also we continue to have fits with, you know, violent crime, 31 shootings last night, two of them fatal. That's par for the course in the summer in Chicago, unfortunately. And while the mayor, his line is that crime is down, homicides are down, that's compared to the last year or two, which have been near record numbers, right, at least since the early 1990s. And that's something you heard Gary McCarthy talk a lot about, because when he was superintendent in 2014, 2015, they did have the lowest homicide rate since the 1960s.
All a lot to look forward to as the race continues to develop. Bill Ruthart, my colleague at Chicago Tribune, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Always a pleasure, Rick. Thanks.